Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with John Rubino, founder of DollarCollapse.com website, and also writing the John Rubino newsletter over at Substack. We will put a link to that down below where you can click on it and get different subscription options where John is talking about the resource sector, the markets, politics, you name it, a wide range of things. John, I read your missives regularly, and I often learn a lot as well as get a kick out of your sense of humor as I go over those. And it's very informative. You share some of the companies you're looking at in the space, so a lot of news that you're sharing. But obviously, all the news we've been talking about, John, over the last 2 weeks has been around this banking debacle slash implosion. And a lot of people are taking this as the signal that finally something has broken. And probably not exactly what the Fed was hoping would break or what other central bankers would hope would break. But it started with the Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, the Silvergate Bank. We've seen some problems with as far as liquidity. We've seen smaller and regional banks have their funding being pulled to be put in larger banks. And then Credit Suisse overseas started wobbling, and it was becoming kind of a nightmare. But over the weekend, it looks like UBS, their biggest competitor, is going to bail them out by buying them out with a take under, and it's also backstopped by the Swiss National Bank. So, John, love to just start off with getting your thoughts on some of the problems we're seeing from the higher rates and from the aggressive central bank hiking process over the last year or so.
Hey, Shad. Yeah, you know, it's amazing to think about this now, but less than 1 week ago, the economy was basically in okay shape by most objective standards. And the consensus was that the Fed was going to continue to tighten here in the U.S. and also the rest of the central banks of the world. They would continue to tighten until they broke something. But it turns out they'd already broken a whole bunch of things, and it all just came to light in the space of a few days. And as you covered just now, you know, a lot of U.S. banks were either going to implode or are kind of on the verge of imploding and need some kind of a bailout. And the U.S. stepped right in with taxpayer money by basically doing away with the FDIC insurance limits on bank deposits. So now, no matter what you put in your bank, even if it was 10 times the amount of insurance that that bank had for your deposit, you're covered, which is a massive moral hazard on at least two levels here. One is that, you know, now you don't have to pay any attention to your bank at all anymore, apparently, because the government's going to bail you out no matter what you put in your bank and no matter what the bank does. So their risk taking is basically off the chain now. The other is because an inverted yield curve and higher long-term interest rates, which were basically the proximate cause of these troubles, they are harder on the business models of regional and community banks than they are on the business models of the big banks. The big banks, of course, have, you know, multiple different ways of making money, and they can they've got investment banking, and they can they've got prop trading desks that can commit all kinds of manipulations and financial crimes and things like that. So they can get by even when there's an inverted yield curve. Smaller banks cannot do that. So that's leading a lot of people to pull their money out of smaller banks and put them into the handful of giant banks that basically rule the U.S. economy. So, you know, if I wanted to put my tinfoil hat on, I might conclude that this was part of a master plan on the part of the governments and the guys that run the governments to concentrate financial power even further in the hands of just a few incredibly powerful entities in anticipation of some kind of taking of control. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I would be led to that conclusion if I was the kind of person who believed in conspiracies. But that's where we are now. We've got a massive bailout that's ongoing now in the U.S. banking sector. And the Fed balance sheet, which is basically a measure of how much money they've pumped into the global financial system, that was shrinking for the last few months. In other words, we were contracting the U.S. money supply as a way of tightening monetary policy generally and slowing the economy down and getting inflation under control. Well, the Fed's balance sheet just took back off. It jumped by about $300 billion in the space of just a few days as part of this whole bank bailout. And it doesn't look like there's really going to be any kind of an end to this because, yeah, the banks are a problem, and they're an ongoing problem. There are still other banks that are liable to implode here going forward, and they'll have to be bailed out by the government, and all the other banks will have to be protected from the implication that they're next. So basically, everybody's going to have to be bailed out for on an ongoing basis. But it's not just the banks that are affected by the absolutely insane monetary policy of the last few decades. And it's not just the banks that are going to go bust unless something is fixed in the very near term, because the, you know, the pension funds in the U.S. are wildly underfunded. And if we have a an equities bear market, a lot of pension funds are 60% in equities, then their underfunding is going to reach a critical level and they'll have to be bailed out. And then, of course, there's derivatives, which, depending on who's doing the counting, is, you know, $750 billion or $250 billion in notional value, or $2 quadrillion. It's an insane amount of money in any case. And the big banks are actually the ones who are running the biggest derivatives books. So let derivatives blow up, which they could very easily do, because so many of them are tied to credit defaults and interest rates and currencies, all kinds of things that are really volatile right now. We might end up having to once again bail out JP Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs, et cetera, et cetera. In which case the whole previous decade was wasted time. You know, we should have just let those guys go bust to begin with in 2008. We've gotten it over with. But so all of that is kind of out there now. So it's crazy, but it's actually under the surface much crazier than it actually seems if you're just reading the headlines in the mainstream press. So yeah, the era of tight money has ended. And we're at the beginning stages of going back to QE and mass bailouts, et cetera, et cetera. So then the question becomes, what does that do to our investments? And the story is very interesting at that point.
Yeah, John, it's really a crazy place we've gotten to here, because as you just pointed out, ever since the great financial crisis, where we had the bailouts of the too big to fail and the government backstopping everything from car companies to, you know, even during the pandemic, we saw them do it with airlines, but, you know, just making sure businesses don't go under, which is kind of unprecedented in and of itself, just because that is the government meddling in free markets. In the natural order of things in a truly free market, businesses that make bad decisions or have bad risk management, including banks, would be allowed to fail. But in this case, nobody wants to see anything fail. So we're basically robbing from Peter to pay Paul. We're constantly robbing from taxpayers to backstop these failed businesses. But all that does is further dilute down the U.S. dollar. It's why our purchasing power has continually gone down for decades here. But it's also astonishing to me that more of a big deal has not been made about this Fed's new program, their Bank Term Funding Program, the BTFP, where they basically could have up to $2 trillion to just backstop any kind of depositor assets in a bank, which means it doesn't really matter, as you stated, what the insurance is. It just matters that you have an account at the bank, and don't worry, they're good for it because the government's got your back. Well, if that's the case, what is this all leading to, John, where everybody is now too big to fail, where no businesses can go under, where no banks can go under? Seems like no large manufacturing companies can go under. Is there a point where we really have not learned our lesson from the great financial crisis, and this has been really a lost decade and a half?
We learned exactly zero lessons from the great financial crisis and the bailouts, or more accurately, we learned the wrong lessons. The financial sector learned that they can basically do anything they want. They can take any risk, and if they succeed, they reap the benefits. They reap the spoils from that policy. And if they fail, the government steps in and bails them out, and they get to pay themselves record year-end bonuses afterwards, which is what the big banks did. And in 2009, they paid themselves record bonuses after almost destroying the global financial system and having to be bailed out with $15 or $20 trillion of taxpayer money. That was the lesson they learned. So it's no surprise that we're seeing a buildup of extremely risky positions across the financial sector. And so some things are starting to blow up right now, but lots of other over-leveraged entities are heading that way. And, I forgot to mention when you mentioned Credit Suisse, but the government of Switzerland just committed 1/3 of its country's GDP to support the Credit Suisse takeover by UBS. So governments are jumping in with both feet, and they're leaving taxpayers on the hook for the results of their bad policy in the past coming home to roost right now. And, you know, it was always going to be the case that we'd get to a point where there's nothing left to do except let the currencies just crash. And I think we're getting closer and closer to that point. And governments are behaving as if they know that. Like, they can bail out anybody in sight right now because they know at some point in the not too distant future, there's going to be a massive monetary reset in any case. So why not roll the dice now and keep themselves in office? If you're a politician, you want to get reelected. Well, you won't do that by allowing banks to fail, but you might do that by bailing them out and pushing the inevitable monetary reset off for another few years. And that's kind of the only way you can really explain what's going on right now, because it can't be that they're so stupid they don't know what they're doing. And let's hope it's not because they're evil geniuses enacting a plan that's going to end up with a dictatorship of a tiny aristocracy ruling the rest of us who have no civil rights whatsoever. So, you know, the most benign explanation for what's happening is that it's just a bunch of people trying to get themselves through to retirement by using taxpayers' money to support a lot of zombie companies and push the ultimate date of their demise off for another few years. And, you know, I don't know if they'll succeed, actually. There's so much that can go wrong in the short run here that it's completely possible that we're close to the end of these games. And they're going to find out in a very short time that they just can't do it anymore, that it doesn't matter how much money you throw at bankrupt banks, that nobody's going to want to keep their money there, that capital is just going to flow into real assets. So, yeah, if you own an oil well or farmland or a bunch of gold and silver, you'll see everybody showing up at your door wanting to buy what you've got. And if you've got bank stocks or government bonds or whatever, you're not going to be able to give the things away. That could easily be the coming year for a lot of countries.
Yeah, John, it's going to be interesting to watch, because we even had one of our listeners make the quote, too big to bail, meaning instead of too big to fail, some of these banks, if they go under, they're so huge. If JP Morgan or Bank of America, some of these things start to wobble, it may get to the point when you think about their derivatives book and how intermixed they are in so many other businesses and lending to other businesses, that it could get too big to bail all of this out at one point. But until then, it doesn't seem like the markets are that scared overall. I'm surprised at how well the general markets have held up, all things considered. And even some riskier assets are getting the bid, like tech, or if you look at the cryptos, they've picked up a bid. But there has been a legitimate safe haven bid, where you've seen bonds get a bid, you've seen the yen, the Japanese yen, pick up some slack, and you've seen gold and silver have a nice run just really over the last couple of weeks, gaining back what they'd lost during the year, but also gold breaking up to a new high for 2023 so far. What do you make of the return of safe havens, John?
Well, we love our bailouts. That's what it is. You know, everybody who's managing money right now has only lived in an environment where if there's trouble, the government steps in, bails out the troubled sector, and then financial asset prices go up. So, you know, you could be a 60-year-old money manager, and that's all you know. So it should be no surprise that the minute governments step in and start bailing people out, everybody's back to risk on. It's interesting, though, at the same time that gold and silver, like you said, had a nice pop. They're down a little bit today, but the mining stocks are still catching a bid. So it's possible that that even on a day when gold and silver are down, that a lot of people have decided they want real assets via mining companies, and that this is maybe a new trend. That would be awesome if it's true. If the miners finally start outperforming the metals, that would be about time, really, because it's been a really long period of underperformance. But that we're seeing it today is, you know, is pretty reassuring. And one other thing, with these big bank derivative books, it's important to understand how they're getting away with it, because, you know, how can you have $50 trillion of derivatives on your books and have that not be a big deal, which is the case for a lot of these big banks? Well, the reason they can get away with it is because they have long derivatives and short derivatives in pretty much every sector and every flavor of the derivatives market, and they net them out against each other to come up with a fairly small derivatives exposure number, which they report. So, you know, if you go through Citigroup's financial statements, you'll see derivatives in there as a number that is really not that big in the context of the other numbers. But the problem with that is that if you've got a big derivatives book and some of the counterparties on one side of your derivatives bets go bust, then all of a sudden your net exposure becomes gross. You know, you all of a sudden are on the hook for the whole show because you're not hedged anymore because some of your counterparties are gone. And that almost happened in 2009 when we had to bail out the big banks because it was a derivatives problem in which, you know, one big insurance company, their derivatives book blew up. They were going to go bust and it was going to take down all the rest of the banking sector. Well, we've got that problem only on steroids now. So that's one of the things that could be out there waiting to happen if things get really volatile in the financial markets and that blows up one side of a big category of derivatives. Then we're right back there, only with even bigger numbers. And, you know, we could try something like what Switzerland did, bet one third of GDP on protecting the bailout. But our GDP in the U.S. at least is dwarfed by the derivatives exposure. Well, you know, one third of our GDP would be a drop in the bucket versus the derivatives books of the five biggest banks, for instance. So there is no possible bailout. There is only a massive currency devaluation in which a lot of big companies go bankrupt and a lot of people who trusted the government are impoverished. And that's our world. You know, it's amazing. But and to get back to the mining stocks and the equities of other companies that have real stuff, you would just see a torrent of money trying to flow into that section of the equities market. And there's no way they're big enough. I mean, yeah, the oil companies are big, but the gold miners, for instance, are minuscule in terms of market cap compared to the amount of money that would be trying to get in. So we would be looking at this absolute catastrophe for several different big sections of the economy and an absolute buying panic for a couple of others. And you want to be in those, you know, you want to be in gold and silver miners when that happens. And you also want a lot of energy exposure and the proper kind of real estate exposure. You know, the whole spectrum of real assets are more interesting right now than they have been basically forever. You know, this is, they might have a hard time if there's just a massive stock market crash right now. But barring that, of course, the government would stop in or step in and start buying stocks if that happens. So there are very few scenarios in which real assets don't do great going forward with all the other stuff that's going on.
Well, John, just speaking of real assets, you brought up oil there at one point and energy, and we have seen that sector still rolling over in spite of gold and silver going up and some of the other commodities going up and the dollar going down. Oil is still down over the last couple of weeks, and it's in the mid-60s, around at $66 for WTI as of the time of this recording. And nat gas is still in the hurt locker. It's down around 222 right now at the time of this recording, so in the low twos. What is your take on the energy space right now and that it's not getting a bid along with the rest of commodities?
Well, I think the problem with energy just lately is that, you know, prior to all these bailouts, the narrative was that the Fed was going to raise interest rates more aggressively and for longer, because that's what they were telling us they were going to do, which was going to bring about pain in the obviously in the financial sector, but also on Main Street. In other words, they were going to try to get people thrown out of work and try to engineer a fairly deep recession in order to get rid of the inflation that they were now focused on fighting. And that's not good for energy, at least in the short run. But the important thing to understand is that, yeah, real asset prices do fluctuate. You know, they'll go up and they'll go down in line with the economy. But what's coming is going to be something different from that, where, you know, we aren't even really going to be focused so much on is the economy going to grow next year? It'll be, can we own stuff that governments can't inflate away? And so that will that'll support energy prices. And uranium as well, natural gas and oil and uranium, even if the economy slows down, because it'll be people trying to park their money in a safe place. It's sort of like Miami condos or something. You know, the people in Latin America, for instance, who all own Miami condos, they don't do it because they think they're getting a great deal in the moment or they think that the price is going to go way up from there. They're doing it so they can have some place where there will be some money left when they go back to it, which they can't count on back home, you know, and it'll be that kind of a mindset. So oil and natural gas are down pretty dramatically from their highs, and they could go down a little bit more from here. But the further down they go, the closer they get to the point at which they can't go down any further, because you get below production cost with an extractive industry, and people start going out of business, and you just don't produce very much anymore. So, you know, is this the bottom for oil? I don't know, but it's way lower than the recent peak. And you get to a point where, okay, you know, they're fluctuating to the downside right now, but there's a limit to how far down they can go. And I don't think we're there yet, but I don't think we're all that far either. So while gold and silver look more interesting right now, energy assets are still kind of a must own for somebody whose strategy is to get into real things right now. So yeah, uranium is looking extremely interesting. And the idea that we're going to go completely to electric vehicles in the next 10 years, that's one of the things that scares people about oil. But, you know, that's physically impossible. We're going to announce these goals, and then we're going to start trying to get there. And we're going to find out that there's just no way you can get enough lithium and cobalt, among many other things, to make a complete transition to electric cars possible. And then at that point, everybody realizes that, oh, we're going to be driving internal combustion cars basically forever, aren't we? Well, oil is interesting. You know, it's going to be one of those thought processes. And that's out there too. So I think the commodities play is a very real thing right now. I don't necessarily know how it's going to work out on a relative basis, which commodity is going to be the big winner and which will lag. But I think conceptually, you just want to be in most of these things and look for extremely high quality companies in extremely high quality jurisdictions and own that category of those broader categories. And I think you'll be just fine.
Well, John, I appreciate you spending some time with us here at the KE Report to share those thoughts on the commodity sector and investors, the trend that's going to grow into investors wanting real goods that the government cannot inflate away. And that's usually in the extractive raw material sector. And I know you do a great job of covering that in your newsletter over at Substack. So if people like getting John's thoughts, definitely click on the link, check that out. And John, we'll keep following along with the market madness here in March as we continue to see more volatility from not just the banking sector, but really geopolitically all across the board as far as the different assets that different companies hold on their books. And the precious metals still holding their role as a safe haven for all of us beleaguered precious metals investors. So always appreciate John spending some time with us here at the KE Report, and looking forward to our next conversation.
Thanks, Chad. Talk to you.